Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, welcome to the Transfer Window podcast with me, Henry McRae. I'm joined by Graham Hunter in Barcelona and Duncan Castles, our resident transfer expert. We're here today to talk about the latest moves in the transfer market, and the biggest one is the biggest ever this week, and that's the news that Neymar is moving to Paris Saint-Germain, and we've got a man on the spot in Barcelona to tell us how it's going on, how it's going down there. Graham.
Well, good morning, H. It's largely you could write your script. The details maybe I can help with, but when a player leaves a club like this, a proud club like this, some would say, and I think potentially accurately, a complacent club like this, it stings. One of the things that would characterise Barca fans is that many of them think that they live in heaven, not earth. There's this expression here which they used to try and sell the deal to persuade David Beckham to come back in 2003, I think it was, when Laporta won the elections. Sandro Rosé was the vice president then. He stood up and was asked at this presidential rally, how the heck are you going to persuade David Beckham to come here instead of Real Madrid when the price has been agreed with both clubs to Manchester United? And Rosé stood up and said, listen, you know, Catalonia has everything, the sun, the mountains, beach, countryside, a beautiful big city. And that, everything is here. We don't need anything outside Catalonia. Mentality permeates right to the fans. And this concept that not only do their great stars leave them, but leave them consistently early. If you go through a list of Luis Milla, Laudrup, Romario, Figo, when you know Ronaldo left in possibly the greatest form of his career in Bobby Robson's reign after just a year, it's something. Maradona's another name. Neymar has given them four seasons. There have been trophies won. The power, the magnetic power of the front three has been good for their image, for their marketing. But when Neymar chooses to leave, there's this sense of slight, this sense of a raw wound with salt in it. And when he chooses to leave for a league, never mind the club, let's take the club separately, Henry, when Duncan and I chew over what next and how to analyse what's coming. The fact that the French league is inferior to the Spanish league is absolutely clear. And therefore, there's a sense of being slighted. There's a sense of, there's not that absolute yet, outflowing of stupid words in football like treason and treachery and all that kind of cack that I've got no time for, given the state the world's in. But there is a sense of a big... I mean, listen, if anybody listening to us right now, you both are old enough to remember Dad's Army and the pompous Captain Mannering when anybody said or did anything they didn't agree with. That pompous little face. Well, that's what the Barcelona fans are feeling right now.
So they're more hurt than angry at the moment, you would say?
I think definitely, because if you try and strip it down, if you try and look at the thing that Figo did, what made people most angry, clearly in this part of the world, was that he went to the most bitter enemies. But he went to the most bitter enemies having about 3 weeks before said no chance, never. And playing in his, you know, his final fixture or the last time you've seen the Barca jersey on, kissing the badge. Now that to them, not to me, but that to them constituted outright treachery, treason. And therefore, the virulence that was he was drenched in by the Barcelona fans was completely different to what's happening so far with Neymar. But I think there's another point he hasn't been here playing in the camp now. So that fan referendum that all three of us are used to, for good or bad, hasn't taken place. Secondly, he may have deserted, but he didn't go AWOL. Look at the tour. One of the things that Neymar still stands accused of is that he's got this Peter Pan mentality. He is not your hard-nosed, dedicated, get out of my way, I'm going to be the best professional, and I'm going to make sacrifices to make sure that my team is the elite and I'm the elite. He's a guy who's been born with enormous gifts, and he's like a freestyler. You know, his ability to move into this hot-dogging you see on TV shows like Soccer AM with a football and doing tricks, his appreciation for that as opposed to his appreciation for what it takes to be a Champions League winning player and a World Cup winning player and a Liga winning player over and over again is very slight. And therefore, you could have said that with all of this going on, that and many footballers have done it before, Duncan will be able to cite names, Duncan will have had experience of people doing this, that very many players, knowing that they're going to move, sign off 2, 3, 4 weeks early, or indeed, you know, punch their way out of a club by, you know, crapping on the staff or bad-mouthing the club in public. And then what Neymar did was he got himself fully ready for the pre-season tour with his mind already clear that he was going to Paris Saint-Germain and of his own volition. And he scored the 3 goals that took him to their first 2 victories over Juventus and Manchester United. And then he set up the winner in the third game against Real Madrid, coincidentally, for Piqué for the 3-2 other pre-season games. But that Molotov effect that you're fishing for about are the natives rioting on the street and carrying pitchforks and torches towards the Camp Nou offices to say, you know, show us Neymar so that we can, you know, we can toast him. That hasn't happened yet. Gradually it will. If he comes back with Paris Saint-Germain, say, in the quarters or the semis of the Champions League, should Barca get that far, then maybe we'll revisit this conversation, Henry. But right now, the focus of ire is on his father, who seemed to be a meddler and a greedy man and somebody who's misguided his son by the fans who phone TV stations or radio stations or write into papers or that I meet. The focus is on him and is on Bartomeu as the president and the head of the board saying, how have you allowed this to happen?
So Duncan, Graham's talking about Neymar's preparation there as though it was, you know, almost a realistic option that he wouldn't go. He was certainly preparing for a season with Barcelona. This transfer deal has rolled on for quite a while. It looks like it's finally coming to a conclusion. How's it unfolded?
Well, I mean, I think there's one thing to say there. His preparation, the going on the Barcelona pre-season tour, was very much forced upon him as a way of looking after his father. So this deal has been in place as far as Neymar's father, who I believe is now known as Napam in Barcelona circles, for weeks now. One of the aspects of what happened with Dani Alves when Paris Saint-Germain hijacked his move to Manchester City was that Neymar was directly involved in that. In fact, Neymar, I'm told, was calling Dani Alves to persuade him to join him at Paris Saint-Germain. I mean, this is a couple of weeks before this transfer actually came to light in the public domain. So, when it was set up, he had to go on this Barcelona pre-season tour because he had to remain a Barcelona player until the end of last month so that his father would receive the commission he'd earned, in inverted commas, for getting Neymar to sign a new contract last year. The other aspect I think is fascinating to me is how badly Barcelona seem to have handled this. I mean, it's no secret that Neymar has been unhappy at the club for a long time and sought to move else somewhere where he would be the main man. And when he signed that new contract, I think it was October last year it was made official, the people I was talking to about that deal said, this is a sticking plaster. I mean, this is a compromise to keep him there for one more year and to ensure that if he does leave, Barcelona will get more money for the deal. He is in no way committed to this club for 5 years. The issues that are ongoing about his position within the team, his desire to become be seen as a top player in the world and a necessity to do that elsewhere, didn't go away when he signed that new contract. Yet, Barcelona managed to present this when it came to light as something that, one, wouldn't happen. I think one of the quotes from a Barcelona director was 200% Neymar stays at the club. And two, something that was impossible to happen, and therefore made themselves look like, as Graham points out, they'd had it done against their will. Whereas for me, the sensible approach to this would be to lay it on Neymar, to say, well, we tried our best to keep him. We weren't able to. He drove this move. We're getting €222 million as a sales price, which is more than double anyone's ever received for a footballer before. We need to reinvest this money in the team. We're going to spend it wisely, and we're going to produce a better Barcelona side off the back of it. Instead, they seem completely on the back foot. And, you know, as Graham has mentioned, the president has put himself in a very difficult position in what is a political club.
So they've got a lot of money coming in.
Duncan's moved the debate there into a really fascinating area, which is the minutiae, the science of it. And I have to say, I back him in terms of their, you know, the myopic nature, because just to put flesh on some of the bones there, when Duncan mentions a boss and a director, vice president, talking about 200%, that was just a couple of weeks ago. That's how myopic they've been. And I think as well, you know, it's very clear that we have to be careful, all of us always need to be careful with retrospect and not sound like, you know, Monday morning quarterbacks. So right now, double the existing transfer fee seems low and ludicrous. But double the existing transfer fee was all that they could get out of Neymar, because Neymar and his people knew right then that they wanted their liberty. And the power seat, when those negotiations were being held from last summer until the autumn for Neymar's new contract, to persuade him not to go to United, to persuade him not to go to Paris Saint-Germain, the power seat was held by Neymar and him and his people. And not that I'm backing him in any way, they were going, well, no, we don't want... The way that algorithm works is that the higher your salary, the higher you can demand that the release clause is, the higher the salary you're paying to a player. And they refused it. And you can see why they refused it now. But, you know, when you talked about Barcelona got a lot of money, only in the way that we inherently talk about football, the amount of profit on this deal is very, very, very low. So they have money coming in, which is at their disposal, but they, you know, only through amortization and only through the way in which football consistently spends on the never never have they got that money. If you take what they've now admitted from having their start point from robbing Real Madrid efficiently, I have to say, of signing Neymar, their start point was saying it cost them €30 million. Well, as the various expensive legal cases went by, the last running figure that Barcelona have admitted to investing up front on Neymar is about €110 million. Now, you throw into that, and that's the investment in getting him, not loyalty payments or signing on fees to Neymar or his father's company, not the legal costs. And to be fair, not potentially the outstanding costs owed to the company that owned part of that may be owed in future, because it's a matter of legal proceedings. They call it, the president here calls it Neymar 1 and Neymar 2 in terms of the legal cases, one of which they settled. They had to pay. You know, they had to pay a big seven-figure sum to make the first legal case go away. I'm not going to sit here with you two and claim to know down to the last centimo what they've spent. But of the 222 million coming in, Henry, I would say that we're back down towards the region of 50 million of that tops would be pure profit. And that'll shock some people, because many people listening will say, well, that 220 million, that's theirs to spend. And it is, if they don't want to put it back into the budgets from which they, you know, they've sort of borrowed from Peter to pay Paul previously. It's very much a financial house of cards.
So it's a bad look for them to lose one of the best players in the world. Are they? Can we see them reacting by trying to make a statement signing? And is there one out there?
Well, I think, I mean, I'm not a Barca fan. So analytically, in terms of what we are supposed, the three of us are supposed to do, we're supposed to be distinct, independent, objective. And it's therefore, when I use the phrase, I fear so, it's to distinguish between that and what I think they should be doing. I fear that because I was writing for ESPN recently, there is an ex-presidential candidate who says he's got enough signatures from Barca Club members to cause what effectively is a censure vote, to censor the current board. And if the voting mass, if that election is brought and the voting mass agrees and votes to censure the current board, it effectively means the beginning of the end for them. And therefore, what I think they will do is exactly what you said, H. I think they'll go out and go like, of the people who vaguely fit the profile of Neymar, which is going to be the most crowd-pleasing? And the game's a bogey when you make those kind of signings. The game's a bogey when you're not saying, what does the team need? What does the squad need? What does the coach want? And then you go directly for your man. And I think potentially the most sensible, based on what happened last season, the most sensible signing that they could possibly achieve is Verratti. But given that, and hey, look out, Neymar, given that once you go to Paris Saint-Germain, there's no buyout clauses and you're at the will of the Qatari owners, and it's a bit, you know, Hotel California. You can never leave. Verratti looks very difficult to prize from that club. There's the balance. Coutinho is the one into whom they're flooding almost all the resources. There are reserve names. There are other little transfer feelers out. But Coutinho is the one that they've decided that they want, not at any cost, but they want him now, and they've studied him for 2 years. They were unsure about whether they could afford him if Neymar stayed. I think they couldn't, if you take into account renewing the contracts of Busquets and Messi and Ter Stegen and Rakitic. They've committed to gigantic amounts of money. Luis Suarez has $500 million to be spent in the stadium. They couldn't afford Coutinho until this change in Neymar's circumstances came along. And Liverpool now, as going back to Duncan's point, because Barcelona have been so slow to see the danger, have been so complacent, although they've got Coutinho in their files as the profile of player that they think they want, the fact is they haven't worked hard enough or soon enough to guarantee that it will happen. At the moment, I think they're 40-60 against.
Are you hearing anything that's possibly moving in the direction of Barcelona, Duncan?
Yeah, look, they made an offer for Coutinho while this was going on. I think while they were still saying that they wouldn't lose Neymar, they made the initial 80 million offer to Liverpool for Coutinho. And I agree entirely with Graham. He's the first choice. He's the one they're pushing money into. And my understanding of it is it's exactly that. It's the headline signing. It's the one that they feel will appease the fans rather than making a more rational assessment of what their squad needs and where they should be investing the money. And actually, we mentioned the new contract for Lionel Messi, which is, to me, another example of the amazing mismanagement of Barcelona. Because I wrote a story about that in the Sunday Times 3 or 4 weeks ago. And when I was being told the numbers that Messi were getting, I was just, you've got to be joking me. And not only was it, you've got to be joking me, because they told me it was 62 million euros gross. when we're digging into that, I was saying, okay, so Messi's won the game then. He's pushed, he's got the mega salary, he's managed to get Barcelona to commit. Now the presentation was of, no, we decided that he was worth this money. We decided that Lionel Messi in our calculation brings X percentage of our revenue to the club. Therefore, we wanted to reward him by giving him a contract that represented or went some way towards representing his contribution to the revenue of the club. Now that's all very charitable, but to give a player a contract that's hugely more valuable than the one Cristiano Ronaldo has at Real Madrid, which is already it was the best in Europe for a long time and a precursor of really high salaries. To do that off your own back, if that's genuine, if that was an action driven by Barcelona rather than forced upon them by Messi.
There's a third force though, Duncan, and you and I, or people like us, we have to think about the third option. And neither you nor I are great fans of propping up the egos or the fallibility of those boards that we see who are gumptionless. But, you know, Messi, once they'd made the cardinal error of not negotiating with him soon enough, and I think that's their principal error because they allowed it to come to the first contacts being after he just lost a major tournament, retired from the Argentinian team in tears, came back to Barcelona. They said, right, let's talk new contracts. And, you know, his response rhymed with duck and included the word off. leave me alone. So, you know, backing up your idea that they don't seem very good at this, I think they left it too late. But at the point at which they agreed that contract that you're forensically breaking down, they stood to let the best player in history, in my view, certainly the best player in Barcelona's history, leave for free next summer. So they were in a situation whereby, let's say everything you've just called them out for remains spot on. I'd throw at you, well, what else? You know, what else do you do? And apart from being earlier and negotiating a better value deal by coming in 18 months previously or 2 months previously, the fact is, it isn't even about self-interest, about like you lose Messi to a free transfer and you just kiss goodbye to any future. Every single person at that club's getting sacked in the morning, not just the president and his board. But beyond that, and I think this is more a chewable one, maybe you've got a different view, I don't think anybody in a pure sporting sense can afford to lose Messi at 30. That's certainly my view. It isn't contrary to what you're arguing about maybe the specific sums and his like-for-like worth with Ronaldo or whether sums like that are damaging football. But I genuinely say to you, in a piece of lateral thinking, what the hell else? You wouldn't have let him go under any circumstances.
No,
if you were that president.
I wouldn't let him go, but I'm taking Barcelona at their word on how they negotiated this contract, and it was we decided to give him such a large scale contract off our own back. It wasn't him who forced it, and I'm sure agreement level that they could have got to without getting to those numbers. But
yeah.
I mean the other element of this is when they were making a decision about Lionel Messi, they were effectively making the decision about Neymar, because they knew that if they wanted to retain Neymar, they had to allow him to move into that position of being the top player at the club. And essentially that meant cashing in on Messi and allowing him to go elsewhere, saying, okay, we've got the best of him. We can take, well, they could easily, calculation would be, we could take 250 million off PSG or another for Lionel Messi, and then we can promote Neymar and solve that problem and build around him with an extra 5 years of youth there. Now, maybe they made the right calculation there. From a football point of view, quite possibly they made the right calculation. Messi's a better player, in my view, than Neymar will ever be. But yeah, there was a decision to be made there, and when they made that decision, they put themselves in this hole that they're...
And as you say, still didn't, even though they were knew they were doing it, still didn't plan properly for it as well, just to compound the stupidity.
Have your exit strategy ready.
So that's another world superstar on the move and not coming to the Premier League in England, obviously. Then we've possibly got one of the best players in the Premier League and Philippe Coutinho moving to Spain. There seems to be a lot of traffic happening that isn't coming to what we call the best league in the world or the most exciting league in the world as it's sold. But there are obviously a lot of moves happening in England as well, and nobody's made any bigger moves than Manchester City this summer. Pep Guardiola spent upwards of 230 million. He signed almost more than half of it on fullbacks. What's your read on Man City and where they're going this summer? How much more have they got to spend, and what can we expect?
Duncan, it's your honour.
My honour, okay. Well, they're not finished by any stretch of the imagination. I think the numbers are worth commenting on. Just looking at that, it's over 230 million committed to transfer fees alone and bonuses. That's the most any club has ever spent. And they've not, by their own admission, they've not got all the players they want at the moment. They've broken the record for fullbacks twice on Kyle Walker, who, if anyone's prepared to argue that Kyle Walker's the best fullback in the world, good luck to them. And then surpassed that with Benjamin Mendy just afterwards. And for good measure, then brought Danilo in as a backup to those two at a price which is pretty close to what was the previous record for fullbacks. Ederson for another 40 million euros. Bernardo Silva for 50, but going up to 75 million euros with big and easily achievable bonuses, as Monaco described it. It's spectacular. Neymar has taken the headlines away the last couple of weeks because it's all been chucked on one player. But what Man City are doing is on the same scale, and in terms of total cost to the club, is probably going to end up as more than PSG are committing on the Neymar deal once they get all their transfers in.
Is this a new thing for Pep, or he's always spent money, isn't he, Graham?
First of all, it isn't him spending it. And I think Duncan accurately called it City all the way there. And I think that, you know, it isn't our purpose this morning to break down all their financial logic, because you look at some of the ways in which they've spent. And if you buy Silva or Mendy from Monaco, if you choose to buy those footballers, then there's no way around the price. Their owner's a billionaire. They're in the ultimate seller's market, and their revenue generation for the Champions League from last season will be extraordinary. Mm. The players are in gigantic demand, and therefore they were, if it's not the ultimate seller's market of all time, it's pretty close. And therefore, while I think, Duncan's right to point out, clubs can't go and rip up previous form sheets and spend that amount of money without being under the microscope in terms of, do we approve? Do we agree? Is it the right value? I'd have to say, as a football journalist and a football lover, I separate that forensically from the coach. The coach, I think, has identified some of the right players. I think that as soon as you look at anything, you said, is it new for Pep? If you look at the way that his fullbacks have performed for him at Barcelona and Bayern Munich and their outright importance, the first column I wrote about him when he joined last summer was, they don't have fullbacks who are good enough, not even close to good enough. Not just in terms of ability, age profile, previous achievements, but football intelligence and how they're going to be able to play. And without getting too artsy-fartsy, the fullbacks are crucial to Pep without them necessarily looking like the stars of the team. They're crucial to the system. And therefore, if it functions, if it works, if he has a couple of trophies at the end of this season, people will probably be picking on the show players, whether it's Jesus, Gabriel Jesus or the two Silvas, I would say, and the sort of vast legions of creative players around and behind them. But I would say that it's fully understandable why Walker and Mendy have been bought. And for me, turning the microscope on myself, I would admit that Danilo is one of those very welcome players that makes you give yourself a right slap in the face and try to rethink your logic. Because when he, again, for the price that Duncan's talking about, Madrid, if you take like for like rather than overall investments in the player, like for like, they've made a profit on a player who for the first 15, 16 months of his time at Real Madrid looked like he was a competition winner. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Portugal's got talent. And, you know, the housewives have voted them in and what the far is he doing there? Because his position, he had the positional sense of Mark Thatcher in the desert. Do you know what I mean? He didn't have a GPS. He had a PSG instead of a GPS, Danilo. Honestly, I think if you'd asked him to, you set him on a pitch, an empty pitch, and asked him to find himself, he couldn't have done it. It literally was in terms of like culpability for errors in what I found. I genuinely found the January of Zidane taking over until today to have been one of the most enjoyable, fascinating, and uplifting times in the modern history of Real Madrid. I just absolutely loved it. And therefore, the poor old kid was, you know, that old Mike Read Ugly Duckling song. He stood out because he was different, because he didn't really seem to have a clue about what he was doing. It was patent from the start he was an athlete. It was patent from the start that if he was allowed to go into the last third of the pitch without any responsibility for what he left behind him, how he'd get back, what might happen if the ball was put long or passed through the lines quickly. Once he got up in that final third, again, it was clear that he had ability. He carried a reputation from Portuguese football about being extremely talented, and what's his name, Florentino Perez, kept saying to Rafa Benitez as well, you know, first name on your sheet every week is Danilo, because he's the best right back in the world. So the thing that makes me slap my head and sort of change my viewing is that the magic of Zidane was, in the last 4 months, you could see that this kid's confidence had been restored. His idea of what his duties were had been rebooted. And that without in any way looking to me like a Pep Guardiola footballer, because of just that lack of peripheral awareness and defensive duties, nonetheless, the improvement was really clear. And therefore, it still surprised me a little bit. I have to say, not that it's City. There have been eras in City's development where Danilo would have just walked straight into the team and everybody would have said, that's fine, never mind his fallibility. Guardiola, I'm going to watch that project, because Guardiola obviously feels that not only does he like some of the things he sees right now, but he can teach that fella in the way that, for example, I think people were shocked at the change in Boateng at Bayern Munich. And again, it's been palpable. So I'm really, really fascinated. And I'll pick up something Duncan said. It's clear that, you know, one of the things that's again fascinating, and I'm going to look at the underbelly rather than just the keynote names. In midfield, they weren't good enough last season. They got rid of Fernando, but it's clear that they're putting a gigantic weight, or projecting a gigantic weight of responsibility on the well-being of Gundogan, who has been cursed by injuries for Duncan, how long? Maybe 5 years? Because without Gundogan functioning, they're not right in midfield yet, as far as I'm concerned. And Kompany at the back, in that really expensive back five with Ederson. Again, I think the importance of Kompany, maybe not playing 55 games a season, but the importance of Kompany being fit again is vast in terms of leadership, experience, vision, athleticism, power, how much you have to rely on Otamendi, who's got pluses and minuses. So anyway, beyond just the spending, it's the Danilo Gundogan, Vinny Kompany thing that really fascinates me right now.
But if these two players who are central to their hopes of success are so injury prone and, you know, could be missing for chunks of the season, Duncan, you're expecting City to spend a lot more. Is that the two positions that we're looking at maybe being invested in?
Well, they want another striker. Alexis Sanchez obviously is a strong candidate for that position. They've had a go at Mbappe, they had a go at Neymar before deciding the fee was too high even for them. But you can look down the squad and there's a lot of holes in it. I mean, I was doing the calculations. If you do it on the sort of basis of you want two good players for every position, they cleared out all four fullbacks, which they were expected to do. And it's something, you know, that, Graham's absolutely right. It's, the fullbacks are fundamental to Pep's football. And very, very early on, I think October last year, I got a shout that he wanted four new fullbacks in. Got the numbers wrong because we reckoned it would be over 100 million spent. He's got it way over that level now. But he's got rid of those fullbacks. He's got rid of Kolarov, who was the fifth most used player for him in the Premier League in terms of minute played last season. He's playing, as Graham points out, a back five or three with two wing backs on the pre-season games. At present, he's only got three experienced centre backs, including Vincent Kompany, who's played about 50 games in 5 years. Even for me, some of the signings are surprising. Graham talks about football intelligence. He's gone for Walker and Danilo as right backs, albeit after failing to get Dani Alves, who was his first choice. City, let's rephrase that. City have gone for Walker and Danilo as right backs. And Graham's talked about Danilo's football intelligence. Kyle Walker is a good fullback, but his strength is his physicality and his energy. He's not top of the game for football intelligence. So have they provided Guardiola with exactly the kind of fullbacks you'd want him to have, given that they're so important to his tactical setup? I'm not sure they have. Benjamin Mendy, yes, great. Best attacking fullback in Europe, regardless of the fee, as long as they can keep him focused from a personality behaviour point of view. But in terms of his footballing quality, is fantastic. But they've still got another fullback to buy there. It's a really interesting setup where you spend that much money and you're probably four or five players away from having even a full squad yet.
Well, if they're spending all this money, you'd have to say that if you come to the end of the season, if you're judging it's a success or not, is it a title or bust? How are we judging Pep on success this season?
I won't go for the word bust, because there are so many things involved in that sort of headline idea. But looking at the league right now, just from my personal point of view, I said last year that I thought it was out of reach and that it would be the greatest achievement of Pep's career if he won the title last season. I just thought I genuinely thought there was no chance. This season, I can't see a team outside United and City winning the title. I think whichever one of them finishes higher up will be champions, is my view. It's absolutely clear from Guardiola's words that he doesn't expect infinite patience, that he doesn't expect his project to go on and on if he doesn't win, for example, or if he isn't very, very serious contender for the Champions League, which I think is certainly, I would be careful putting my hat in the ring right now. It looks dubious for a newly constructed project. But it's a very odd tournament and very odd things are happening at the top of European football for my money right now. So I'm not touting them as Champions League winning candidates, but in terms of the title, for this to be in anywhere near an acceptable season for all the major players on the scene, I don't mean the footballers, at Manchester City, they either need to be, you know, in the title race up to the last week and in the Champions League last four, last two. Otherwise, it's a demonstrable setback. To say that the project has failed, when by Duncan's own explanation there's been a mass investment now. He bucked the trend at Barcelona when there was a mass investment but from the same football director, Chico Pagares' time, in 2008, and they went out and won the treble. That was bucking the trend. That shouldn't be regarded by anybody as the norm. But boy, they have to be pugnaciously challenging for all the major trophies, and also playing consistently, which they didn't do last season, in order for this first season of the new project not to be regarded as misspent.
I don't think it's title or bust. I think Abu Dhabi are extremely patient owners who have consistently, since they bought that club, delegated responsibility to who they believe are the best professionals to run it in all departments. And their system has been, we hire you, we think you're the best, we will back you to the hilt to allow you to perform. If you fail to perform, we'll move on to someone else. So, this is the biggest backing ever. This, you know, Guardiola has had this club redesigned to attract him to the club and to allow him to perform at the best of his possible level. So to dump him after 2 years if they fail to win the title this year would be odd. And I would also say that this rebuild actually makes it harder to win the title in the first season. If you're changing over this many players in one summer, it doesn't matter how much money you spend. You've got to get them to integrate as a group. And as I've pointed out, there's four or five players still not there, and we're 1 week away from the start of the season. So if you really want to do this kind of rebuild, then you want all of those players in before pre-season starts to give yourself a proper chance to get them fit and work with them. One other point I would make about Pep Guardiola's history in football, and bear in mind that these transfers are joint procedures with the club. They're not Pep Guardiola saying, I will have that player and I will have no other player, and the whole squad is built that way. But he hasn't been good in the transfer market throughout his career. This is a guy who at Barcelona managed to sign Zlatan Ibrahimovic, hand Inter Milan Samuel Eto'o as a make weight in the deal, plus 60 million euros. With Inter then going on to relieve Barcelona of the Champions League title. His strength as a manager has not been in recruiting players. It's been in coaching players, devising tactical plans. It's on the training ground and it's on the field. It's not been in the transfer market. That's not to say he can't develop those abilities. I would say that if you compare him to his direct rival, Jose Mourinho wasn't brilliant in the transfer market early in his career and has got progressively better as he's gone on, as he's gained experience in it. And I think realised that at the very top level, you have to get that element right. You know, if you're moving between clubs, being able to recruit the right players and integrate them into a team is as important as being able to coach players, improve them as players, and do the tactical stuff on the field. It's an element of being a fully rounded modern football manager.
So talking of Jose Mourinho, Manchester United have made another signing this week with Matic arriving to the central midfield role, which we've been expecting United to fill. He started the transfer window hoping for four signings, one to go. Who's that going to be? There's reports this morning that they've come to an agreement with Perisic from Inter Milan with a loan deal and Anthony Martial going the other way. What do we know about that?
Well, I mean, you said he started the transfer window hoping for four signings. He wanted more signings than four. He might be prepared to compromise on four by the end of the window. And the Manu Matic is certainly a very important one. A guy to balance the midfield, to provide a counterweight to Paul Pogba, to allow Pogba to sort of follow his instinctive path, which is to be a guy who hits long passes, plays creatively, takes risks. I think when he played last night, he used a formation which he had Pogba very far forward, playing almost just behind Lukaku, which was the first time he has Matic on the field to hold and shield in front of the in front of the defence. That's the kind of addition you've got there. And it's, you know, it's a player he trusts, a player he's worked with before, as he's talked about, a player who knows what he wants in the field. And another thing, which I think I saw someone pick up on last week, is it's another tall player. If you look at Mourinho's track record at all his clubs, he likes to have as tall a team on the pitch as possible. And I think the article I read was pointing out that of the seven signings now he's made at Manchester United, or seven first team signings he's made, six of them have been over 6 foot. So you add a dimension to the team, particularly in the Premier League, which is the central focus for Manchester United this season, when you've got a bigger, stronger team than the rest, and you can add the tactical and the skill elements on top of that.
I think, Henry, to my mind, one of the things that I like about that signing is that if you lump on top of what Duncan's been analysing there, one of the things that's characterised the best of Mourinho, from Porto to Chelsea, and spectacularly for a short time at Madrid, it's that feeling that he's got people around him in the dressing room who'll batter their grannies for him, who are inspired by him, who are you know, loyal to him. Now, Matic was at Chelsea at a time when things went awry for Mourinho that very last time. But the fact that he's more than happy, eager, intensely eager to come and join him again, speaks nothing to me about the finances involved in the deal or life under Conte. It speaks of Mourinho implanting into that dressing room, into that squad and into that first team, somebody who resembles the way that throughout the best spells, the winning spells, the no one will defeat us spells, of the remarkable parts of Mourinho's career. He's got somebody in there who I think can turn heads of those who are happy to work for Mourinho at Manchester United and happy to be playing in a better team, but maybe don't feel the special magic that was so patently a driving force at Porto and Chelsea and Real Madrid and Inter Milan too. I mean, if you throw in people like, you know, Carvalho, or if you think about Arbeloa, and if you think about Materazzi at Inter, Drogba at Chelsea, I mean, honestly, they'd have sold their kids and their house and their positions for Mourinho at a certain stage. He was a guru. And Matic coming to this Manchester United under those circumstances and being one of those players like, I'm a Mourinho man, I think that's very powerful for United in terms that complement the tactical things that Duncan was saying.
And is that enough? You're saying that with City, they're the two main challengers for this season's English title. You think that's enough to turn United into challengers, or will you still expect the squad to be strengthened?
Let me take a lateral view on this. Mm. You know, I think just like with Pep, it's a process learning about Mourinho as you're in his squad, his work practices, his strategic and tactical demands, his moods, Pep's moods. It's an intense learning process to work under these men. They're not identical, but they ain't that far apart in terms of the core things that they want. They've got slightly different ends in mind, and the majority of those United players, Henry, are a year to the better and several trophies to the better under Mourinho, plus a pre-season. I think that before you talk about absolutely guaranteed needing 3-4 more signings, I think that's a vast, vast benefit. They've got Champions League football, which makes elite players perform in an elite way from day to day. Whereas, I think mistakenly, some footballers imagine that Europa League is not such a challenge to them in terms of their daily standards, their thinking, their training. The travel is an issue compared to when they play football again. I think it's a big advantage, not a disadvantage, for United to be in the Champions League. More, I think they've signed quite well. I know it's clearly established from Duncan's reporting that Mourinho, A, has significant other targets in mind. B, thought he'd have Perisic by now, and you can understand why. And C, is frustrated at certain people at the club for things not having happened more effectively. That said, United, with who they've developed, how they've developed, and who they've signed, look to me to be a significantly more dangerous team than they were last season.
So as things stand, are we expecting Perisic to arrive? Duncan?
I don't know if Perisic is going to be the one they get in the end. I think there's still flexibility. I'm sure Perisic wasn't the first choice for that position. He's a compromise in the sense they thought it'd be cheaper. It hasn't turned out that way because Inter have pushed for a very high price in an inflated market. I get the feeling that he's calmer now, that he's got Matic in. He's been very pleased with how the pre-season's gone. I'm completely with Graham in terms of talking about the importance of getting used to the way he works and having a full pre-season. And there's, you know, you just got to look at his track record at clubs. Every club he's been at, his best season at that club in terms of success on the field has been the second season at the club. And he's won the national title at every club he's been at in the second season he's been there, which is, given the range of clubs and leagues he's worked in, is quite a sensational statistic. I think this is the hardest to ask for him. I'm not so confident that this is between Manchester City and Man United. I think this is a very open, balanced league. It does help those two clubs that Liverpool and Chelsea have got to play Champions League football this season. Well, Liverpool, if they manage to make it through their playoff game. But this is a hard task. And you've only got to look at the way Mourinho talks about it. He's very careful when he talks about his expectations for the season. He probably went too far last season by saying he was in it to win the title. He kind of made a rod for his own back there in being too aggressive about it. And if you listen carefully to the way he talks about things going into this season, he keeps on saying, this is tough. There's a lot of competition here. Yes, we're capable of winning it, but that doesn't mean we will win it.
Okay, gents, we've covered a lot of ground. I've got one last question for you. Neymar's transfer deal, new world record, €222 million. If Willie Miller was playing today, how much would he be worth?
Not even half of David Neary.
It was only Neary's toe that made him special. and I was
against
that
Brazil
game.
Yeah.
I was at that game, so I know.
Gents,
seriously, David Neary in this transfer market, he'd be straight into Manchester City number one choice, ideal modern centre back.
Okay, well, thanks, gents. That's been fantastic stuff. This has been the Transfer Window podcast. You can get us on iTunes and you can find us on Audioboom. Please check us out again. We'll be back next week and throughout the transfer window and maybe even beyond. Thanks very much.